It's Dear Instructional Designer, episode 13. Hey everyone, welcome to Dear Instructional Designer, the show about the instructional design journey. I'm your host, Kristen Anthony. Today's guest is Ashley Chesson, an incredible instructional designer, author, and presenter. I first met her through the eLearning Heroes Instructional Design Challenges. Ashley has been so great at sharing her experiences. In particular, she's also an ID entrepreneur who has transitioned into a full-time job in academia, our first academic besides me, while keeping her business on the side. So a lot of expertise and experience here. I can't wait to dig in. So without further ado, here's my conversation with Ashley. All right. So Ashley, tell me a little bit about how you became an instructional designer.
So my road to instructional design was accidental, like many. I had been unemployed. I quit my job as a store manager at Starbucks to finish my last year of my undergrad. And I was applying to grad school for speech language pathology. So totally different field. I had a background in linguistics, so I knew I either wanted to go into speech language pathology or tech writing, which are both very different, but wasn't quite focused on tech writing just then. And one of my girlfriends, who is a former teacher, she was working at an organization that developed military training. And she said, "I'm working here. I think you're smart. We need warm bodies. Can you come and interview?" So I didn't know what an instructional designer was at that point. And I went in for the interview, and the gentleman that hired me was very excited that I had a background in linguistics. I think he thought I could speak many different languages, which was not true. I just didn't tell him that at that point. I took the job gratefully and was employed. And so I kind of got thrown into the role because the running joke there was that it was a training company that had no training, which I think is quite common. So once we got content, it was, "Here's our LCMS. Can you figure it out? Here, I logged you in, now do things and see if you can get it working." And that's kind of how it was for the 6 years that I was there. Went to grad school. I did my grad school at a distance and got a master's of education in post-secondary studies. So I started kind of becoming a bit more interested in higher education and less interested in military training, which is kind of what is the predominant industry in my province. So I had been freelancing for a little while I was working there, and I wasn't doing instructional design freelancing. I was just kind of doing odds and ends. And I decided, you know, I'm going to try and take this full time. So I spent probably about 6 months saving up a quitting fund. And I spent probably a year cultivating some core relationships with clients. And once I had a core base, I just quit my full-time job and took my independent work full time. And I kind of lucked out and got a contract with a local university. And now that's my full time permanent position. So I no longer work independently for them. I work as an instructional developer there full time. And then I also do, I still have my small business, and I exclusively do development because I kind of, I don't do development at the university, but I still love doing development. So I do that independently, and it's kind of worked out well.
Oh, awesome. Okay. Awesome. So you're my first academic instructional designer. What is that like, especially in contrast to your previous jobs?
It is much different than I thought it would be. Right. When I had this dream of going into higher ed, I was like, you know, I'm going to change the landscape of online learning at these universities. And I was specifically thinking about my time at the school where I did my undergrad, because they've had the same online courses since I was there in early 2000. Mm-hmm. And so I basically pitched myself to all of these universities because I was like, man, you know, I've got the time. I know what I'm doing. I can make these courses and kind of broaden your offerings and increase your enrollment and do all these awesome things. So that was how I thought of the way that instructional design in higher ed worked. Right. Yeah. I was like, why aren't the universities doing this? This is like a big secret. And then when I got the job, I realized very quickly that the reason why there are fewer courses than people would like, and departments would like, is because of faculty collective agreements and all the red tape involved in developing online courses. So it's not just, here's the content, make it happen. It's finding a faculty member who's willing to develop an online course and has the time to go through the process and actually do the development and then teach it online. So there's a lot more bells and whistles that kind of go along with the process than I had thought. And I mean, we've increased our course offerings hugely in the last 2.5 years, but it is still hampered by workloads. I mean, faculty members, especially tenure track faculty, have research interests, mm-hmm. and they were hired partially based on what they've been researching. So they have to take sabbatical and work on their research and their specialties. And then they might have a full course load when they're not on sabbatical. So it's really a lot more complicated than I had anticipated.
Right. Yeah. So I'm actually in higher ed as well. And I moved from a professional development focused organization into this. And I've been experiencing a lot of the same culture shock. And what we do is focusing on providing faculty with frameworks and not so much development. And you talked a little bit about this, but is that true for you as well? Do you guys not actually do development?
No, it's, I mean, we provide the framework. We kind of have a process where the first step is the development plan. So in traditional on-campus courses, the faculty members just fly by the seat of their pants and develop their weekly content. However, their process works for them. There's no, the faculties and the deans don't really control that. So they kind of get to do whatever they want. So our department is different in terms of having this actual development plan as a first step, which is tied to their first payment. but it really helps kind of plan out the course. And I think it helps take less, the faculty members kind of streamlines their development once they actually get into the LMS and are entering things. We, because of the faculty collective agreements, we are not allowed to do any of the development. I mean, we can help out and every now and again, or sometimes if someone's in a pinch, I'll say, just give me your content and I'll toss it in and then you can review it. Mm-hmm. But it's very much hands off, and it's kind of more of a project management role. Yeah. Than what I've been used to, because in the military, it was, you wear all the hats and you might be doing the analysis and you might be doing the design and you might also be developing for 3 years, right, the same course. So it was very different process. Coming from a place that had project managers for each project instead of now you're the project manager.
Right. So talking about that, What skills do you think you have developed to help you do this instructional design work better?
So I think that, I mean, the military is great in terms of, because you had to wear a lot of different hats and the technologies were dependent on whichever client you were working with. So, I mean, that's where I got my first taste of Articulate Studio and working with Engage and Quizmaker and unfortunately Captivate and Outstart and all kinds of different authoring tools and learning management systems. And it also gave me a really great understanding of design documentation and task analyses and working with media developers and programmers and how to request what you need from the different people that you're working with. Because if I want information from a SME, I'm going to have to ask them in a different way because their brain works much differently than, say, a Flash developer or someone who's doing Unity gaming. So it was, I would say that my communication skills have improved considerably and my understanding of instructional design as a full process kind of came together there. And at the university, my communication skills have changed. And kind of, I would say that they've become more refined in terms of how I speak with faculty members and the types of questions that I ask them, because they seem to be a bit more sensitive of a bunch than like ex-military guys. So I think that communication has probably been the biggest one. The instructional design elements I've just kind of picked up here and there and through my education. So I really think that it was communication, to be honest.
Yeah, I could totally see that. So with faculty, do you find, what are your difficulties working with them?
It depends on the faculty member. Some are, I know my boss, she likes to say that some are more prickly and she might, if it's someone that I haven't worked with, she may pop into my office and say, oh, I met with so-and-so, they're developing a course, but they're a little prickly. So oh, yeah. Just a heads up.
Yeah.
The thing that I find hard about working with faculty is that they're very busy and it's very hard to nail them down sometimes. I've had courses that, I mean, they always come together at the last minute, but as a project manager, it's very frustrating when 30 emails go unanswered and then all of a sudden it's a huge push to semester start when that's usually the biggest and busiest time for me. So I think that's probably the most difficult. The other element that I would say is difficult is trying to recommend alternative teaching strategies. So usually when I meet with faculty members initially, I'll have a conversation with them, especially if they haven't taught online before. And I'll say, you know, how would you teach this course face-to-face? Because typically they usually have been teaching this course that they're developing face-to-face for a while. And so I'll talk to them about their teaching strategies in a face-to-face class, and then I'll try and provide them with alternatives, things that might work in the synchronous and asynchronous sections of their online course. And some of them are very receptive and they're very excited and eager to try new things. A lot of them are very nervous, and their nervous is usually masked as, no, that won't work for me. It's usually kind of a shutdown of the idea, but in reality, they're just kind of nervous about doing something different when they're used to doing things one way for such a long time. I've started doing kind of peer-to-peer workshops with them, and those have been fantastic because they really, it's not that they don't respect me and what I do. It's that they're used to working in a collaborative environment where sometimes I find that when I get the faculty members together as a group of peers, I'll usually be strategic about it and I'll plant a couple of key faculty members who I know have been doing fantastic things and have some good suggestions. And I'll get them together to kind of discuss. I'll guide the discussion and I'll get them to talk to one another about what's been working. And so that's kind of helped a lot when it comes to helping them think about their teaching strategies differently. But yeah, I think that in working with faculty, it's just the most difficult thing is trying to offer suggestions for how they should be teaching a certain format and trying to track them down. Their workload is just insane.
Yeah, it's so awesome, the insight that you offered about how to help with that. So I'm actually in an organization that is sort of a center for teaching and learning, but you're in a department?
Yes, we're the other distinction I've learned about working in higher ed, at least in Nova Scotia, is that the reason it took me so long to find a job was because I was waiting for the one instructional designer at this university to leave their position. So I'm really the only instructional developer there.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Okay. Whereas a lot of other universities have, especially from what I've heard in the States, have big organizations where there's many instructional designers. They might work across the campus mm-hmm. in different areas, but there's more than one.
So how do you deal with that, being the only person? Like, what do you do for community or trying out things or having new ideas?
Well, I have a pretty forward-thinking boss. I mean, unfortunately, she's going to be retiring soon, and I'll probably just sob at my desk for for a month. But she's always making some really good suggestions, or if she sees something in like an article somewhere that has some different methods, she'll kind of forward it to me to make sure I've seen it. Mm-hmm. I do a lot of professional development, so going to conferences and kind of networking there. Mm-hmm. And that's really where I get my community. And I'm also working on starting up a storyline or articulate user group of some sort, because there are quite a few instructional designers in Halifax. They're just all over the place. They're not not at one organization or another.
Yeah, so I know you recently returned from a conference, and you know, as a newbie, I've tried and failed to get conference sessions accepted. So what would be your advice to people to sort of get into conferencing?
I mean, I've only been accepted to one large conference. I presented at Learning Solutions several years ago mm-hmm. on building your e-learning portfolio. And it was good. It was, I didn't have a lot of attendance because of the time slot that they put it in. Mm-hmm. And then I hadn't been accepted for, I didn't get accepted for DevLearn. And there were a couple other smaller ones. Mm-hmm. I did get accepted for, oh gosh, I can't remember what it was called, to be honest. It was in San Diego, or is in San Diego, coming soon. But yeah, I think that the thing about conferences is that they want attendance. So they want organizations to usually send multiple employees. Mm-hmm. So I have discovered that if you're going at it from a freelancing standpoint, like if that's your topic and that's kind of what you want to chat about, is how to become a successful freelancer or your freelance rates or things like that, those topics are less likely to get picked up because mm-hmm. you're not really the type of audience they want to bring. They don't want the independents because the independents don't have as much money to spend on the conference registration.
Right. Yeah.
So I did find that out, because most of my last year when I submitted for DevLearn, most of them were about freelancing. And a very wise man told me that they probably weren't going to be picked up. So I think that being strategic about your topic, I don't know. It kind of stumps me as well because I really don't know what they're looking for.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember submitting one topic a couple of years ago, the same year I submitted for Learning Solutions, and it was called My SME and Me. And I thought it was hilarious because I just find the dynamic between subject matter experts and instructional designers sometimes to be like a hilarious, like Seinfeld episode. And so that didn't get picked up. And then the next year I sent in a couple other topics and I renamed that one. I was like, well, maybe if I make it sound funny, it'll get picked up. So it was My SME and Me or a Larry David episode or something like that. And it didn't get picked up either. So I don't have a whole lot of experience getting picked up for conferences. Mm-hmm. As a small business, I can expense through my taxes. Well, I mean, the taxes say I can expense like 2 business trips a year or something like that. So I usually will do conferences for my business trips and then expense my registration and all of that. And then through the university, I do one PD event a year, like one big one. So this year I'm going to a higher ed conference in Ontario.
And so, yeah, I mean, that's sort of another thing I wanted to pick your brain about. You know, full disclosure, I've never been to any conference. I've just never been able to go any place. But I noticed that when I was looking for conferences as an instructional designer in higher ed at this point, there was kind of a dearth of choices. Would you say that sort of the big conferences are appropriate for people in higher ed, or would you suggest a higher ed focused conference?
I do find that there's a distinction between like the bigger conferences like Learning Solutions, DevLearn, ATD, mm-hmm. Versus I think they have more of a focus on e-learning, business, like business management type of topics, mm-hmm. and less of a focus on higher ed specific. So, I mean, there's a lot of sessions that you could apply to higher ed, but mm-hmm. they're not as focused on like universities and colleges as a whole. So, mm-hmm. Like I've never been able to get my boss to send me to DevLearn because there weren't enough topics that would have been relevant for the university. Mm-hmm. So the conference that I'm attending this year, I mean, we use Moodle. So I did a Moodle Moot last year.
Oh, okay.
For them. And then this year I'm going to a conference called CAUS, which is the Canadian Association for University Continuing Education. So I do find that there is a pretty big delineation. It's not, I can't, if I'm interested in going to something from a developer's perspective, I'm looking at ATD, Learning Solutions, DevLearn, all of those types of conferences, which is unfortunate because they end up having a higher registration fee usually. Mm-hmm. And I'm just a small little business. But if I want to do something as a professional development opportunity for the university, I usually have to be a bit more strategic. And the options have been a bit limited because the Online Learning Consortium does quite a few conferences, and they were doing one, I think in April in New Orleans that I really wanted to go to, and I got accepted as a speaker, but because the Canadian dollar is so terrible, the institution wouldn't send me down because, and with OLC, you have to pay your own registration, even if you get accepted as a speaker.
Oh, man.
So it wasn't, I have other business interests, so I didn't want to pay for it myself. So I was kind of, this year I've kind of been limited to higher ed conferences that are also in Canada.
So you mentioned that your LMS is Moodle. Do you find that you have to have a lot of skills in developing in Moodle in order to help out or do your job well?
No, not really. I mean, I've worked in Moodle before, so I can get around in it. It's not, that's not usually an issue for me. But someone new coming to the position wouldn't stand in their way of doing their job, because we do have a courseware administrator and she is the Moodle guru. She's been working in it for as long as it's been around. Mm-hmm. And so if there are ever any questions that I have about the LMS, I can usually just consult her, or we have someone else, forget what her role is, but she does courseware administration, but also works a bit more in the weeds with enrolling students and setting up quizzes and things like that. So I have two people that I can kind of consult if necessary.
So Ashley, what would you look for in a new ID colleague?
In a new colleague?
Yes.
I think, so that's an interesting question, because we're actually hiring someone who will work in a different area of the university, but in parallel to my role. And we're also doing, we just got accepted for funding to do an adaptive learning project, which requires an instructional designer. So I've been kind of poking around in job descriptions lately to try and get them where they need to be. In higher ed, I think I would look for someone who has experience managing projects, because that's largely what I do. Ideally, if it's a wish list job posting, I would request that they had experience working with faculty members specifically. So working either in a university or college or some form of academia, even as a researcher or a TA, that would be fine. But I think the brunt of what I would be looking for is someone who is an instructional designer, so has that basis, but has worked in specifically the analysis and design phases, because otherwise it's going, I mean, that's a lot of conceptual type of ideology. It's a lot harder it takes just a lot more time to catch someone up to speed on those phases than I feel like it does for development. Mm-hmm. So I think that's what I would be looking for, but it really has to be someone who is a good communicator and who can effectively run projects.
So another thing of interest is, what do you guys call the framework that you're using? I know that when I came to my current position, I was looking at Kathy Moore's action mapping as well as SAM, but now in the higher ed space, we use a process that's called backwards design. What do you guys use?
I mean, we don't really use a framework that I would say, yes, we're for sure using a SAT framework, or we're for sure using ADDIE. I think we kind of adapt our framework from ADDIE, to be honest. Mm-hmm. I would say that it's an adaptation of ADDIE.
Okay. So last question here. What is one skill that you think every newbie ID should develop?
That every would-be ID could develop?
Yeah.
One skill that would-be IDs could develop. I would say, I mean, I know I've said it a lot, but communication. You need to be able to communicate with your SMEs. If not, it's just going to be a painful experience for you. So I think, from my experience, a lot of instructional designers work in silos. They're kind of in their own office or cubicle, just doing their own thing. Like, this is my task, I'm going to do it. And there's not as much collaboration. So I really think that communication is what they need to be improving upon.
And how would you recommend practicing that?
I think in higher ed, a good strategy would be to set up meetings with all of your faculty members. I mean, right now I have 27 projects, set up 27 meetings with each of those faculty members and go through the motions of asking your questions, prepare your questions in advance so that you're not forgetting something when you're talking to them, because you need to be cognizant that their time is at a premium and you may not get an email response from them for several more weeks. Mm-hmm. So structure your questions beforehand, go into your meeting prepared, and meet with all kinds of different faculty members. Because for me to talk to someone who is a chemistry prof is much different than the conversation I'm having with a psychology prof. Mm-hmm. And once you kind of get a feel for faculty members across industry or across faculties, I guess, you'll kind of cultivate a better communication skill set in terms of knowing how you can talk to certain types of faculty members, how things differ between someone who is a doctor and has their PhD versus talking to a faculty member who has a master's. Mm-hmm. And I mean, because I find that there is kind of a bit of a class difference in terms of how people want to be referred to. Mm-hmm. And so you need to experience those conversations so that you can learn how to sensitize your questions and become a more effective communicator with them.
Awesome.
All right, rapid fire question time. Instructional designer or learning experience designer?
Instructional designer.
What is one piece of advice you wish someone had given you as a beginner ID?
You don't need to know it all.
What books, blogs, or research are you reading lately?
At the university, I'm doing all kinds of different research. So I'm usually reading, right now it's all about adaptive learning. So that's what that's all about. My favorite book for learning is How We Learn by Benedict Carey. And I think every learning and development professional should be reading that. For blogs, I'm really entrenched in, let's see, the Articulate community. I mean, that's no surprise there. Rachel Barnum's blog I really like. Holly McDonald's blog, Spark Your Interest, is great. Mel Milloway's LinkedIn posts are fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. One thing that should be in every ID's portfolio.
Anything you need. I say that because most people don't have an e-learning portfolio, but I do really think that you should have any bit of work that you can have in there. I mean, ideally it would be nice to have, I think it's good to have a bunch of different work sample type options, even if they're sanitized and because you're not allowed to share. But I also think that you should have some fun things in there that kind of showcase your personality. So that's why I have a lot of e-learning heroes challenges in there.
One piece of interview wisdom.
Oh my gosh, just do some research about the organization that you're going to be interviewed for, because I know I've sat on some interview panels and it never ceases to amaze me that people do not look at the organization's website. So at least go there and look at the about section, because there's going to be a question about the organization.
Last but not least, Ashley, where can people catch up with you?
I would say Twitter is the best bet. It's AMDCHIASSON. AMD Chasson. So that's Twitter's probably the best bet.
All right. Awesome. Thank you so much for taking time out to share your experience with us.
Oh, you're really welcome. Thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me.
Man, Ashley was so awesome to share so much with us. She offered up some valuable insight into presenting that might be useful for anyone looking to get into that, and I hope to explore that a bit more in future episodes. She also talked about something that James Finder brought up in my conversation with him, and that is striking that balance between having a side business and having a full-time job. You know, Ashley shows us a different path for those of you interested. You can do both, but you have to balance those carefully so as not to burn out. She also, I think, gave some really valuable insight into what ID in academia is really like. It's a very different environment from professional development-focused positions, so that's really useful information for all of you job seekers out there. If you've got questions for us, I would love it if you would strike up a conversation. You can find Ashley at amdchessel and me at anthchris. I would love to hear from you. Thanks so much for listening, and take care.